This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our topic today is Cunningham Children's Home. Our guests are Reverend Gay King Crady, Chaplain, and Cloydia Hill Larimore, Vice President for Public Relations, Marketing, and Development. It's good to have both of you here today. I'm guest host Becca Guyette. Steve Shoemaker is out today. Let's go ahead and get started by talking about the history of Cunningham Children's Home. I think many people still view it as an orphanage, but it's evolved. Let's talk about its beginnings.
Well, actually, it's really interesting that we're here in November because it was Thanksgiving Day in 1894 when Joseph and Mary Cunningham made their bequest to leave their home to the women of what was then the Methodist Episcopal Church for an orphanage and deaconess's home. And it took a year for the women to decide that they could actually manage to do this. And then on October 25th, 1895, the home opened as an orphanage.
And so were children in there then right away, day and night?
Day and night. Immediately, I think within the first few months, there were about 70 children. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to me that here, almost 110 years later, every single minute since the home opened in 1895, Cunningham has been serving children. When we first started out, it was an orphanage. But a lot of people think that an orphanage is for kids who have no parents. Mm-hmm. Typically, they were actually many half-orphans, meaning that they had one living parent. And a lot of the situations were related to economics, that the living parent could not take care of the kids. I've heard stories and met families where they had 8 or 9 kids who came to live at the orphanage. And obviously, the surviving parent wasn't able to care for all of the kids at home, so they would have the children grow up in the orphanage, and then as they got older, they would usually return home. So there were many cases where they were what you would call the half-orphans, and there were also the true orphans, children who had lost both parents, and those children would be adopted out to families throughout the state.
And now these children came from all parts of Illinois?
When we first started out in the early late 1800s, in the early years, most of the children were from actually this immediate area. We were actually a county home mm-hmm. in the beginning, and a lot of the children were coming from this area. But they were also coming from throughout the Illinois Central Conference of the Methodist Church, because it was the women who were the stewards of the home, who managed the home. Mm-hmm. And it's also, that's another important thing as we talk about how much Cunningham has changed. One thing that has remained constant is the fact that it is still the women, today it's the United Methodist Women, who are the stewards of Cunningham Children's Home. And that has been a consistent in the entire 110 years. One of the reasons why I personally think Cunningham is still there is because Joseph and Mary Cunningham asked that their home be used to focus on the most pressing demands mm-hmm. related to children. And the women have always risen to that occasion, and the home has changed over the years. Now we'll talk about us being a residential treatment center, and we have a lot of other programs at the home. And that is because the women have really stayed focused on what the needs of the children are.
Before we get too much into the other programs, Chaplain, if you could talk about your affiliation and what you do there that keeps that tie to the Methodist Church so strong.
I'm new as a chaplain as of July, so it's a new adventure for me. But there has, throughout the history of Cunningham, been a connection with a chaplain and someone to provide spiritual guidance. We're not trying to make United Methodists out of any of the children that come, but to try to help them just realize God's love in the midst of their healing, that part of what can help them get on with their life and heal from the past is to have a connection with God.
Absolutely.
So it's really exciting. I'm amazed how many of them have some understanding, some of them have a very deep understanding of that. Some of them have really some mixed messages that have been given to them about God's love for them. Mm-hmm. So it's really a very diverse group of children that we work with. But I think they are hungry spiritually. And mm-hmm. They recognize that, I think, and they're curious and interested to know. I think the thing that's hardest for them to grasp is that God really, you know, would love someone like them, because by the time they get to us, they've been through so much, and sure. they have, in many cases, done some things that aren't very positive either as a result of that, as acting out because of the kind of traumas they've had, that they don't feel good about that. And they think, gosh, you know, would God love me? And you know, can life really be better for me? That sounds great out there, you know, but mm-hmm. is that real for me? So my challenge and my joy is to try to help them recognize this unconditional love of God that's available. And I don't think it just falls to the chaplain, really. The whole agency operates on this unconditional love, that no matter what these children do or have done, that we will continue to love them. So both with spoken word, but with also many actions by staff on a day-to-day basis, hour by hour, minute by minute, they are shown this unconditional love. And that is a real foundational part of the work that we do in the treatment with these children.
That's wonderful. Could each of you, maybe you first, Claudia, talk about what brought you to Cunningham? I think that hearing about this home, it's apparent that it takes a special type of person to work there. And maybe what was your path that brought you there?
Well, I actually started at Cunningham in 1990 now, so I've been there 14 years. When I was 12 years old and first moved to Urbana, my first really good friend was a young girl who lived at Cunningham Children's Home. And, you know, I never really thought much about it. I just knew that's where she lived. And I remember sitting with her, sitting next to her the day that we learned that President Kennedy had been killed, and looking in her eyes when I heard that word, and it's that message. And I've always just thought of her, you mm-hmm. know, very close. And then my grandmother was very active in the United Methodist Women. She was the district secretary of the United Methodist Women of this area and served on the Cunningham board. So I had friends in high school, not only Margie, but others that I knew who had lived at Cunningham. And then my grandmother had this strong connection with Cunningham. And in the late 80s, 1980s, I had made a decision to go back to school and become involved in fundraising for not-for-profits, because I saw what was happening to the state funding. And I knew mm-hmm. it was going to be important for people to get involved. And I really wasn't sure where I would end up, but somehow people are called or are pulled to Cunningham, and for some reason I know that this is where I was supposed to be, and I've ended up there. And I think it's just all of those connections. Another thing I was just reading about ready to celebrate the 110th anniversary of Cunningham, someone today just brought me an article about our 60th anniversary, and they were mentioning that Joseph Cunningham was responsible for the statue of Abraham Lincoln that is in Carl Park. He had purchased that, which I had forgotten, and I grew up in the house right next to that statue. Oh, so I guess there's just a lot of connections here that I didn't realize. I think I've just been, this is where I was supposed to end up, was at Cunningham Children's Home. And I love it there. It's a great place.
And you, Chaplain?
Well, I also feel very called to be there. I was a pastor in local United Methodist churches for 24 years, and I have loved it. I've loved serving as a pastor, but when this position became open and I heard about it, the timing was just right. And so I asked my bishop if I could apply and went through that process. I think the major reason, of course, is Jesus' example of reaching out to children and reaching out to people who society tends to neglect or not know how to deal with. And that, of course, is primary in my ministry. How can I be about that? I've also, through my ministry, in several churches, recognized that the church wasn't always doing all it could in the neighborhood areas, that there were children at risk. And one particular church I was involved in got very involved with those children. And I learned a lot about those kinds of kids and what kinds of things they go through on a day-to-day basis, you know, not having food or not having a parent home or having a parent who beats up the other parent. And, you know, and so we saw some of that. And then my spouse and I also adopted four children.
Oh.
And when three of them were older when we got them, they were 7 or 8. And so they came with some history of things that were very hard for them and difficult. And so, you know, having lived through that and seen what all that brings with it, I guess just kind of prepared me for this. And I feel like this is one of the ways maybe that I have a little bit of insight and a real passion to help these kids know that they're beautiful and that they're loved and that they can heal. Mm-hmm. And there's hope for the future.
And I think that's one of the special things about Cunningham is that when a lot of the kids who do come there have been rejected over and over and over, it's not unusual in our residential program for a child to have lived in maybe 12 or 14 different foster homes before they end up in residential treatment. And when you're talking about a child who's 9 years old, you know, you're talking about someone who's been moved every 6 months of their life or every, mm-hmm. you know, and just when they start to settle in, there's one more rejection. And a lot of that, you know, is reflected then in the child's behaviors. They become more and more difficult to deal with because one of the things our kids are great at is they're going to reject you before you have the chance to reject them. And one of the things at Cunningham that I see in our staff who work with the children on a daily basis and the therapists and the teachers in the classrooms are that they don't give up on the kids. They continue to look at what do we need to do differently to help this child be successful. Our Gerber on-ground school, which is the special education school for the children who live with us in our residential program, talk about building ramps for the kids and helping them get where they need to go rather than just looking at, well, it's the child's problem.
Sure.
You know, it's not the child's problem. And we talk about also the fact that our kids have invisible disabilities, you know, an emotional problem, mm-hmm. post-traumatic stress disorder, behavior disorders. Those aren't visible physical disabilities, but they're very real disabilities that our children need to develop skills to be able to cope and be productive members of society. And that's what our staff are there helping them do.
It certainly takes a village. I will. Well, I want to hear more about the staff, but first, could you talk about the programs of the home?
Sure. Our main program and the one that most people think of when they drive by and see what now is 17 acres of property is our residential treatment program. On our main campus, which is on Cunningham Avenue in Urbana, we have 39 residents who live there. And that is part of the residential treatment program. And that would be the thing that's most comparable to what people refer to as the orphanage. Mm-hmm. These are kids who are there living to receive treatment, therapeutic treatment, psychological treatment for the issues that they're dealing with, usually because of abuse and neglect, but also could be related to neurological disorders such as autism, pervasive developmental disorders, those kinds of things. Then we also have two homes out in the community, one in Champaign and one in Urbana, for older youth. And those are called our community group homes. Most people will be familiar with the one in Urbana, which is the Kendall Gill Boys Group Home. Kendall Gill, who played basketball for the University of Illinois and has been in the NBA now for almost 14 years, contributed money to help us build that building. And so that's why it's referred to as the Kendall Gill Community Boys Group Home. And those are for kids who are older. Our main campus is for 9 to 16, could be all the way up to 18, but usually when a child is 15 or 16, they'll move into one of the community group homes and then stay there until they finish high school. And then after high school, we have opportunities for them to go into our independent living program, which also includes a transitional living house for boys. It's like a boarding house. There are staff there, but not as much staff as you would would have in the community group home or on the main campus. And then we actually have young people that we're working with who are living in their own apartments. We even work with teen mothers who are rearing their children, and they're in our independent living program. In addition, we have a foster treatment program where we have foster homes, and we have 15 youth placed in those homes throughout Champaign County, some in Vermilion County. And then we also have, our Circle Academy Day Treatment School. I was about to forget that, which is a special education school for children from Champaign County who are referred by their local school district for special education services, usually related to the behavior disorders, learning disabilities, youth who need one-on-one attention in the classroom, who are not able to be maintained in the public school setting, and so they will be referred to us. And we have 75 students in that program, and those students are from kindergarten all the way up to graduation. We actually have one student who is 20 years old, but because it's special education, you can be in the program until your 21st birthday, so we still have that student there. So on any given day now, Cunningham is serving 165 individual children and youth, but you can't just say it's the 165 because we also work with their families, siblings, and it really is even larger than that.
Before we talk further about this, I'd like to invite callers to call to ask questions or make comments. You can call within the Champaign-Urbana community, 333-9455. Outside of the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We're talking today about Cunningham Children's Home with our guests, Reverend Gay King-Creedy and Claudia Hill-Larimore. Going back to the programs, clearly with all these programs and all the different individuals that you work with, there's a huge staff need. How do you find qualified staff to work with all these individuals? And are they all affiliated with the Methodist Church? How do you keep them to remember the mission of the organization? Either one of you.
Well, they certainly aren't all United Methodists. But I do think that these are people who come there who really want to help others, you know, that they're about something greater than themselves, and it's, you know, not about a paycheck primarily. These are people who want to help other people get their lives back on track and make a difference. And I know we're always looking for those kind of people.
We're looking for great people like that. And I think one of the things that we're blessed, because we're in Champaign-Urbana, where the University of Illinois is, and we have a great pool to pull from, because we are looking for certified special education teachers, students, you know, graduates in psychology, early childhood development, social justice issues, criminal justice, that kind of thing. And we've really started using in our training a lot of pre-training before staff go into the cottages to work with the children or go into the classrooms. We do almost 2 weeks worth of training. Mm-hmm. We do testing, psychological testing, predictive index testing to make sure that this is a fit for the person, because this you know, when I first started at Cunningham, a lot of people would come to apply for jobs and they'd say, well, I just really like kids. I love kids and I really want to make a difference in a kid's life. You know, and that's great and that's wonderful. But we need people today who can set boundaries with kids, really care about the kids, but be a true mentor and leader and really give them guidance and not necessarily just love them in that sense and be their best friend.
Sure.
But it's like the really good parent, you
exactly.
know, who can do
setting
it all.
Right.
Setting
and
boundaries.
That.
And also, a lot of people sometimes are attracted to this work because they have had experiences in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've learned over the years that what we want are really healthy people who have worked through all of that before they get there, and or have had the training, so they are in the position to really be the professional with the child and be able to set the boundaries. And so we're really looking for that type of staff.
Do you have a lot of staff who are overnight? How does that work? Do you have house parents? How is that set up?
There used to be house parents, but now just I think the intensity of the kind of work it is, it's more of a team type mm-hmm. format where cottages have teams of people. And, yes, there is somebody awake all night in those cottages and lots of people around, you know, to help with homework and chores and getting ready for bed and just – It takes a lot of people. You said earlier it takes a village, and that's what it reminds me of a lot is just all the people that are around throughout the day, of course, the therapists and the teachers, but at night, certainly our cottages are well-staffed.
Each cottage has 9 to 10 youth living in it. We have one cottage that's all boys, and actually we have two cottages on the main campus that are all boys, one cottage that's all girls, and then one cottage that has boys and girls. And usually there can be 3 to 4 staff on duty with those 10 children. But you will find if one or two children are in crisis, that can take most of the staff's attention. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when people hear we're 4 adults for 10 children, sometimes that's not enough, you know, because you are dealing with children who are in crisis and who do have crisis. So it does take a lot of people, and it takes people who, as we said before, are very well trained.
You mentioned that there's the two homes, one in Urbana, one in Champaign. Is the one, you said the one in Urbana is a boys' home. Is the one in Champaign a girls' home?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now, how does the staff work there? Same way, 3 or 4 staff or multiple on?
Yes, usually 3 staff there during most times and then 2 at night. The children who are in the community-based group home would have usually come from the main campus and achieve some of their behavioral goals and be ready to start making those steps into the community. And many times when people say, well, what happens to a child who's lived at Cunningham? Where do they go after Cunningham? Because now we're being asked to work with the kids usually for about a year to 18 months and then step them down into another setting, and usually that's foster care.
Okay.
And that would be treatment foster homes, or perhaps with some of the children who still have their family connected, are still involved with either perhaps another past foster home or their birth families, they're able to return home. But for many of the kids, the next step will be maybe into the community-based group home and then on into independent living. And we do work with young people up to their 21st birthday, so we can...
Where are these children coming from in terms of what types of home do they come from? Where do they live often before they come?
Well, lots of different settings, but as Claudia mentioned earlier, a lot of them have been in their homes, you know, with their parents originally, but something has happened. There's been a major, you know, upheaval there. Their parents may be in prison. Their parents may be dead. Their parents may just not be able to care for them. So then they go to foster care, and that's what she mentioned. Sometimes they have been in foster care so many times. And it's not a fault necessarily of theirs or the foster homes. It's just that their experiences were so traumatic, you know, that they don't function well when they went to a foster home. And then each time that they fail there, then it's just like another I don't care and I don't want to be here, and it, you know, it just sort of escalates. And so they come from all over the state. They're referred to Cunningham through Department of Children and Family Services, usually Department of Corrections,
Department of Human Services, right. Individual care grants that parents are able to access if their child has a disability. Say a parent who maybe has an autistic child, mm-hmm. and the autistic child also has some aggressive behavior, some behavior problems, so they're not able to be maintained at home or in a school environment, then they might make a referral through an individual care grant through the Department of Human Services and be placed at a place like Cunningham. So primarily our kids come from the Central Illinois region of the Department of Children and Family Services. So they're more from this area than not. But we will have children from everywhere in the state. At one time, it was not uncommon for us to have a lot of children from the Chicago area because and this would have been back, you know, 15 years ago maybe, because that was a it was great opportunity for a child to get out of the city and come to the rural areas.
Sure.
And I've met a lot of those kids, but that really isn't the situation now. Most of the youth that we're working with now are from the central part of the state.
We have a caller on line one. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, this is a very interesting. I never realized the scope of Cunningham Home, although I've lived here almost 42 years. But anyway, I've been thinking a lot about the golden rule, putting faith and works together. These people do it, and I wanted to give them accolades for that. My question is, how do you keep going yourself? And I'll hang up and listen off the air.
It's a wonderful question.
I'll tell you how I keep going, and I think how our other staff keep going. Last Friday afternoon, I was coming back from having lunch with a coworker. We drove into the driveway, and there were two women, elderly women, getting out of a car. And I looked at my coworker, Stephanie, and I said, do you have a tour today? Because a lot of times we're giving tours to United Methodist women. And she said, no. And I said, oh, it's a former resident. And she said, how do you know that? I said, look at her eyes. And this woman had gotten out of the car, and she was probably close to 80. She's looking around the campus, and you can just see in her eyes that she's home. And I walked up to her, and I shook her hand, and I said, you used to live here, didn't you? And she looked at me. She said, how did you know that? I said, I could see it in your eyes. And then she told me her name. And I had heard so many people who come back to visit in the 14 years that I'd been there ask about this woman. And I said, oh, you're a nurse. And she said, how did you know that? And I said, because people had told me that. Well, she's now living. She left the home in 1955. When she graduated from high school, went to Blackburn College and then on to Northwestern and became a nurse. And she's now retired. She ended up the vice president of nursing in a large hospital out on the East Coast. She and her friend were driving down 74, headed somewhere else. And she mentioned to her friend that she really ought to stop and see Cunningham. It's the first time she'd been back in 50 years.
Oh.
But when she was sitting there talking, and, you know, she said, this is home. This is where I got my values. This is where she had lived there from the time she was 8 until she graduated from high school, so 10 years. And she talked about Sarah English, who was the superintendent then, and she said that she was successful because Mrs. English believed in her. And that she knew she believed in her. And that's why I do it. It's all of the former residents who come back and all of the people that I've gotten to know in the 14 years that I've been at Cunningham. There's a gentleman I visit with once a year who's 97 years old now and lives in Maryland. And he was at Cunningham from 1915 to 1921. And he reconnected with us when his granddaughter came back to get her PhD at the University of Illinois. And then he said, well, you ought to go by and find out where I used to live.
Sure.
And so we reconnected. And you just hear these stories and you know this is home to these people, even if they don't come back. And it's their roots and it is their family. And it's so important that we give our kids today everything we can so that they have a home. And that Cunningham, you know, my goal as the fundraiser is to make sure that 50 years from now, when one of our kids comes back, that it's still there. And there are people there who remember and who care and who love those kids as much as the people did in the past and who believe in them. And that there are kids that come back, you know, 50 years from now and who say, yes, you know, Sam Banks believed in me, and that's why I'm successful.
Mm-hmm. And Sam Banks is the current president.
Right. He's our current CEO.
How do you determine if a child should come to Cunningham?
Well, the Department of Children and Family Services might make a referral. The Department of Human Services, and we have criteria from our intake director would receive a referral packet, and they would go through all of the information in it. And what we're looking at in that is not is would the child be good for Cunningham, but would Cunningham be the appropriate place for the child?
Sure.
What is it that this child needs in the way of treatment? And do we have the school services to provide? Do we have the therapeutic services to provide? Would the therapeutic milieu that we use in the cottages be appropriate for this child? We continue to take children who are who are probably the most severely disturbed in the state, who have the most pressing demands. We have 3 full-time nurses to manage the psychotropic medications that our children use, consulting psychiatrists. Our clinical director is one of the most qualified in the state for residential treatment. Mm-hmm. And they really look at what we can provide for the child based on what has been seen in the history. And then we meet with the child, and our intake coordinator will interview the child and see if once you read about a child, what you read about a child on paper is not necessarily what you see.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the things that are very successful with and that I commend our clinical staff for, is they don't just look at the paper. They meet the child. They know our staff. They find out after talking to the child whether or not our staff have the potential to work with the child, and that's what we look at. And usually, you know, I would say if our staff are given an opportunity to work with a child, we can usually be successful. And if we can keep the child long enough connected, you know, so that we can get connected to them.
And sure, it's a fit.
Can I go back to the question that the woman called in and
asked?
Sure. Just a couple other insights. I think the way the staff keep going, some of the ways, I have found so many of them just in my short time there to be such faith-based a group of people. I know that they have their own, you know, religious beliefs and spiritual disciplines, but we also have time for prayer on campus. I offer devotions and quite a few people come. I think the staff are really good at supporting one another, too. I mean, I think when you work that closely with people in intense situations, you know, there's a lot of support. I've seen that, and a lot of encouragement of one another. So I think that's another thing. But it also goes along with what Claudia says. You know, you can have a day where it just feels like, you know, everybody's sort of out of control. But all it takes is one child to say something. And it's just like that gives you hope. I can go to the next step. This is me making a difference. When I first came, you know, you go through all this training and they tell you, you know, these are kids are not going to just open their arms to you. So you're prepared for that. And I did these classes called Meet the Chaplain. And I'm sure that, you know, they were rolling their eyes like, I'm sure we have to meet the chaplain, you know. And some of them were very eager because some of them have had church connection and they miss that and they long for that. But it was one group, and I think the majority of them in that small group said, we don't believe in God. I'm an atheist, you know. So am I. And I thought, oh, great, you know.
Sure.
But I said, well, we're gonna do this little introduction anyway, so you know what I'm about and why I'm here. And the next day, I got out of my car. You know, I'm thinking, oh, boy, this is a tough crowd.
Exactly.
You know?
Here I
get
go
out of my
again.
Car bright and early in the morning, and here comes one of these young people who'd been in that group the day before, mm-hmm. and he came. I couldn't even get my car door open, and he said, I'm not really an atheist. I just said that. He wanted to make sure. Yeah. And then he followed me to my office, and he ended up borrowing a book off of my shelf. And, you know, it was just a neat
You really thing. Are making, yes.
And I think that's what keeps people going. Incidents like that, you know, where somebody says something to you, one of the young people says something, and you're just energized for the next step.
It makes all the difference in
the
world. You're listening to Keeping the Faith on AM 580 WILL. We have with us today guests from Cunningham Children's Home. Keeping the Faith is supported in part by the University YMCA. The Y Student Board is the oldest continuous student organization at the University of Illinois. Since 1873, the University YMCA has been developing student leaders by providing opportunities for community service and social action. This week at the Y, we we are continuing to accept applications for Communiversity classes. Our Communiversity program is an opportunity for continued learning at very inexpensive rates. We offer wonderful classes, ballroom dancing and martial arts, fitness classes, a number of different types. We're also always looking for new classes. So if you have a different an idea of a class that you might want to teach, a particular skill or hobby you'd like to share with the community, please call our Communiversity coordinator, Cherise Johnson, at 337-1514. In addition, this week we are selling a large selection of UNICEF cards and calendars at the University YMCA. UNICEF holiday cards, all occasion cards, and calendars will be sold during the lunch hours between 11:45 a.m. and 1:15 p.m. on weekdays, this week, Monday through Friday, and next week. Purchase of UNICEF cards and calendars enriches the lives of children throughout the world with programs designed to protect children's rights and improve their health, a theme running through the program today. Even the University YMCA is located at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign, on the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street, across from Lincoln Hall. For more information on this program, please contact Joan Nels Hoppen at 369-2853. In addition, the 34th Annual Peace Bazaar will be held Saturday, December 4th at Community United Church of Christ on the corner of 6th and Daniel. The Peace Bazaar is an annual alternative gift fair where we sell new and recycled gifts, furniture, works of art, toys, books, plants, fresh baked goods, and much more. Funds raised go to groups promoting peace and social justice. If you have items you would like to donate, or if you would like to volunteer a couple of hours of your time, please call Joan Nels Hoppen at 369-2853. The Peace Bazaar is co-sponsored by the UC Friends Meeting, Community United Church of Christ, First Mennonite Peace Institute, and McKinley Presbyterian Student Foundation. I'd like to remind everyone that we're here today with Reverend Gay King Crady, chaplain of Cunningham Children's Home, and Claudia Hill Larimore, who is Vice President for Marketing, Public Relations, and Development at Cunningham Children's Home. I'd like to invite callers to ask questions or make comments. If you are within the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 333-9455, or if you are outside of the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. To get back to the spiritual guidance offered to the students there, what types of programs or I don't know if it even goes as far as classes. What types of spiritual guidance, what types of things are available to the students out there and the children?
Well, in the past, there has been a chapel service. There was a time, a short time here where they were without a chaplain, and so that sort of lapsed, but we hope to get back to that. But what I have found is that you have to start where they are and build that trust before you can sort of have a larger kind of program. So I, with the help of the cottage teams, they said, you know, our children haven't been read to. So I just started reading to them, and it's just sort of opened up the door, and it's evolved into several other things. But that one-on-one or with small groups, reading to them about hope and relationships where people have had to overcome things in their lives and give them encouragement for their lives. And now they're starting to come to some of the smaller groups that I have. I have spiritual life groups for two of the cottages. In the past, the chaplains have co-led with some of our recreational special therapies staff, groups on values and groups on Claudia, help me out. There's just so many things.
That's right. I mean, even
friendships and...
And when we have a developmental model that we use at Cunningham called the Circle of Courage, which has the four quadrants to it: belonging, mastery, independence, and generosity. So one of the things when you were talking earlier is the generosity part, which we really, the chaplain has been involved with. And one of the things, the care packages that you want to tell her about that we're going to do.
Yeah, Department of Children and Family Services, as there are young people who are floating out there who don't have family connection, and they may come out of an agency such as ours and go on to college, but they don't have mom and dad them, you know, the care packages. So they've started this care package program where you adopt sort of a college student and then each month send them something and send letters back and forth. Well, our cottage groups have now adopted a college student. So each cottage now makes a care package every month to send to a college student. And it gives them, you know, hope. It's encouraging someone else, but also gives them hope that, you know, they were once in a system like this. They were once where I was.
Exactly. Now, that's the first thing that occurred to me is the impact that would have even, I mean, of course it feels wonderful for the person on the receiving end, but for those students on the giving end, to think that they could get there someday and they have the support to get there.
Well, and the other aspect, what you were talking about with the UNICEF cards and some of those kinds of things, last week at Cunningham, our kids were raising money for food for families. So they were selling Christmas ornaments. They had made popcorn that they had popped and all kinds of things to the staff so they could raise money to go out and buy canned goods so that they could give it to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. So again, that's a part of that. Everything is teaching all of those values and also teaching value to our children, that they are individuals of value. And that they have something to give, even though they are a child living in a children's home, you know, whatever, that they are worthy of giving to others, and that there are ways that they can do that. And so we help them work with that. I think one of the greatest things, I mean, no child has ever come to Cunningham by choice. You know, they don't come skipping up the driveway and say, I want to live here. You know, they come there for sad, tragic reasons. But yet they learn to belong there. They feel connected. And even though they may be struggling and they may be angry and they may say, I don't want to be here, and they probably don't want to be there, they also are still feeling connected. I think the other day I noticed one of our boys was walking across the yard and he kept bending over and he had a bunch of stuff in his hands and he kept bending over and he'd sort of drop stuff and then he'd pick it up and then he was just kind of struggling to get across the yard. And I went up to him and I said, can I help you? And he said, somebody littered and I'm cleaning it up. Oh. You know, and he was just so upset that someone had dropped things in the yard. And I thought that was just so cool because it showed this is his home.
Exactly.
You know,
and he takes pride in that.
Right. He takes pride in it. And it was important to him to pick up. And our campus, actually, we've had visitors come and they say, you don't have trash barrels around, but yet there's nothing on the grass. And a lot of that, I think, is because our kids, even though they struggle, they're very proud of where they live and they want it to be nice.
Probably some of the best homes some of them have ever lived in. Well, you talked about the work that you do with families. I'd like if Claudia, you could share more about that, and then Chaplain afterwards, if you could talk about the spiritual work, if there's any type of conflict there that might occur when a child goes back into a home. But what types of programs do you offer in working with the families?
Well, if there is a family that is still connected with a child, and usually there is, or a grandmother, an aunt, relatives, siblings, brothers and sisters are usually very important. A child may be placed with us, but their siblings may still be in a foster home or at home or wherever. So there's a lot of therapy that goes on with our therapist, and the clinical caseworkers are managing the case to keep the families connected. Our children will go on visits. We're responsible for making sure the children get to those visits or the siblings get to us so that they can visit. Or if a child is going home for a visit, that we facilitate that. And so there's a lot of work that the therapist will be doing to perhaps help the family understand what the child is going through so that they can transition back to the home. Also, when you're talking about working with foster families now, we have children coming from residential going into foster homes. So we are recruiting foster parents, training those foster parents, and then working to match the child with the foster home.
The right family.
Because you really need, the right family. You know, what family is this child going to need? In some cases, they need a family with a really strong father figure because they haven't had that. Or there are a lot of issues for some kids with the mother image, depending on where the abuse or the neglect was. So, you know, there might need to be a particular type of mother that this child can connect with. Or other siblings and age groups and things like that. So we look at family situations in that regard. So really, when you talk about family, there really is no set definition of what that can mean. But it's anyone who has been important in that child's life. Family could even be someone who's not really related, but a positive visiting resource that we can connect with that child.
I'd like to make one final invitation to callers to call in and ask questions or make comments with our guest today from Cunningham Children's Home. If you're outside of the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 1-800-222-9455. Within the Champaign-Urbana community, you can call 333-9455. Getting back to what we were talking about and the work with the families, what types of spiritual work might be done with the families, and are there any conflicts with that when children are reintroduced back into homes?
Well, while they're with us, we try very hard to follow whatever their family faith base is, you know, and so that we're providing them with something that's consistent or complementary to that. And so we try to provide, you know, a wide variety of insights, and I'm real excited about being in this community because we have such great resources. We have the Islamic community and the Jewish community, and, you know, so we can help them understand. I think that's just good for all of us to know what other people believe. And, you know, I think we just have to stay true to trying to provide for them what fits with their tradition and what the young person is feeling, what their needs are, and try to help the family understand this is what they're experiencing and going through, and this is where their, you know, faith, this is the direction their faith is taking. So we try to stay in dialogue about that when that's possible. And like Claudia says, it varies because sometimes they are going back to family and sometimes they aren't. But I don't think there's been a lot of conflict about that.
And also we only can work with children, and we work with based on permission from the guardian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So whether the state has to give us permission for the child to attend spiritual training or the guardian, whoever the guardian is, if it's the parent.
It's also always a voluntary type of the program that, you know, spiritual program is always, you know, if the young people want to. Today I found it kind of funny because I was leading a group, and we were in sort of the living room area, and there are always a few who always come to that group, and a couple who say, I'm not into religion, I don't do church, but they, you know, I'm just amazed what you can absorb by eavesdropping.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot to be learned, you know, anywhere. But
conveniently walking around the perimeter.
Right. And this person today was so funny because she kept making comments and kept adding and asking questions, and yet did not want to be connected with that.
Sure.
You know? So, yeah. So, you know, and there may be lots of reasons for that. But nonetheless, you know, it's sort of taking people where they are and helping them to see themselves in a new light. So.
Sure. We have a caller on line one. Caller, go ahead. Caller? Hello?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead and ask
you. My question, I'm the one who called before.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted you to review for me the circle of whatever it is and the four principles. I know one's mastering courage and that. So hang up and listen off the air. Thank you so much for all the work you do, your faith and your works.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's called the Circle of Courage, and it was developed by Dr. Larry Brentrow and Martin Brokenleg. And the Circle of Courage has four quadrants: belonging, mastery, independence, and generosity. And the feeling is that if a child has expertise or is competent in these four areas, that they can become a whole person. And actually, I have to tell you, one day I was getting ready to go out and speak to a group about Cunningham, and it was a group of junior high kids, and I was going to tell them about the Circle of Courage. And as I was preparing for that, one of our boys walked into my office, and he sat down and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm getting ready to talk to somebody about the Circle of Courage." And he said, "Well, what are you going to tell them?" And I said, "Well, I'm not sure. What should I tell them?" Mm-hmm. And he got this real serious look on his face, and he was 16 years old at the time. And he said, well, you need to tell them that the Circle of Courage has 4 points: belonging, mastery, independence, and generosity. And if you have these 4 things in your life, you can find peace. Hmm. And when you find peace, you can become whole. And I said, well, I'm not sure why I'm going out to talk about this. I think you should be going out to talk about that. And that's when you asked earlier, caller, about why do you work at Cunningham? That's another reason, you know, because the kids continue to kind of make it clear what life is all about. So he obviously understood the Circle of Courage.
Absolutely. Are the children at Cunningham eligible for adoption?
The vast majority of them aren't. I don't even know if any of ours currently would be.
I think there may be one or two mm-hmm. who would, through the Department of Children and Family Services, be listed on the list of youth who are available for adoption. Typically, they are not. Their parents' rights may not have been terminated. Okay. Their parents may still have some rights, even though the state is the guardian of the child. And in some cases, you know, the parents are still very much involved. So that is not always the case. It would probably be more likely that they would be going into a foster care situation after leaving Cunningham, mm-hmm. and then maybe with the eventual hope of returning home.
Do any of these children have drug or alcohol dependencies?
We are not a drug and alcohol treatment facility, so we would not provide treatment for a child, and so we would not take a child who was who that was a primary need for treatment. If we were working with a child who developed that problem, or then we would seek treatment for them. But we are not a treatment center for children with drug and alcohol problems.
You mentioned that some of your children go on with your assistance to colleges and universities. Are scholarships available for them? Is there a fund set up? How does that work?
Yes, that's one of the great joys of Cunningham. And again, we go back to the United Methodist Women and our supporters. We actually have couple of different funds that have been set up. We have the William Myers Education Fund, which is an educational scholarship for children who vocational training, secondary education. We actually have 2 students right now in Mississippi, one who just finished her master's at the University of Tennessee and is now working at Rust College in Holly Springs, Mississippi. And then we have another student who's working on her master's in social work, and those are both being supported by the Myers Education Fund. Then we also have several students who are at Parkland right now, mm-hmm. And then we have some who are in vocational training as well. And those are all scholarships that are available for kids who are out of the system. Anyone who has been connected with Cunningham as a student while they were under the age of 21 is eligible. So someone might come back who's in their 30s and be ready to go back to school, and they would get in touch with either Sam Banks or me, Cloydia, and we can help them facilitate the scholarship money that's available to them. We also have special needs funds and what we call the Goodhue Family Fund, which was set up by a former resident to help past residents of Cunningham with special needs that they might have. So there are many opportunities when people reconnect with us or have questions that we might be able to help them out.
We just have a few more minutes, but I was wondering if for people this topic and talking about the home really brings an urge to help and so for people listening, people in the community, what types of needs for help are there?
There's the daily stuff you do for kids. Everything from socks and soap to Christmas presents and birthday presents, and of course, you know, all the special therapy type programs cost, you know, a great deal of money. So there's always a list. We can give people a list.
That's one of the things that is one of the frustrations, is that when people do want to help, sometimes they want to come out and spend mm-hmm. time with a child and be involved with the children one-on-one. And that's something that we're not always able to do. And a lot of that has to do with the confidentiality issues related to why the children are there. Sometimes it's for the children's own safety that we are not allowing people to know who is with us. Also, it's because our children have had so many disappointments, and you may think it's great to come out and visit and interact once or twice with a child, but to them that may be a big letdown because it doesn't become a permanent thing.
Sure.
So a lot of what we do with the United Methodist Women and others is, like you say, providing the gifts, the in-kind gifts, also being involved, paying attention, what's going on in the local school districts, what's going on politically on behalf of children, mm-hmm. You know, what is happening that will help make our state better for children, mm-hmm. And that they are getting the needs met. Cunningham receives reimbursement for services by the state, the school districts, people who refer the children, but we have to raise approximately $1 million every year just to keep going and provide the services that we do. So that has to come from either our endowment or new gifts. And then now we're in the process of building a new building. Financially, you know, we need that financial support. And you know, we need people's prayers. We need them to think, you know, Chaplain Gay was getting ready to say it. I beat her to it. But, you know, we need them to be lifting up these kids and thinking about them and looking at all of our children out there in the community with respect and care and doing everything we can to make this a better place for kids.
They'll certainly be in my prayers. I'd like to thank both of you for coming today. This has been very, very enlightening and informative. And thank everyone who has called in. Just a reminder that UNICEF cards will be on sale at the University YMCA this week and next. From 11:45 a.m. to 1:15 p.m., the University YMCA is located on the corner of Wright and Chalmers on campus across from Lincoln Hall at the university. In addition, the 34th Annual Peace Bazaar will be held Saturday, December 4th at the Community United Church of Christ. They are still looking for donations of items to sell. Items that would make a good gift include things that somebody else could use. Consider recycling some of your belongings. They will not accept donations of used clothing, computer equipment, broken items, or violent toys, but are looking to sell new and recycled gifts, furniture, works of art, toys, books, plants, fresh baked goods, and much more. If you have questions about either of these events, please call Joan Nels Hoppen at 369-2853. Next week, Sunday, November 21st, on Keeping the Faith, the guest will be current Poet Laureate of the United States, Ted Kuger. As many of you know, Steve Shoemaker, our regular host, is himself a poet, and we'll be interviewing Ted Kuger, and who will be reading some of his poetry and talking about the creative process of developing poetry. I'd like to again thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. I'm Becca Guyette, Program Director at the University YMCA, your guest host for today. As Steve Shoemaker, our regular host, will return next week with, again, our guest Poet Laureate of the U.S., Ted Kuger.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
It's one of the great stories in the history of books. James Murray was a poor kid from Scotland who dropped out of school at 14. Somehow, he went on to create the world's greatest dictionary. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, onto the best of our knowledge, Simon Winchester tells the remarkable story of James Murray and the Oxford English Dictionary. It's to the best of our knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana.
Tonight at 8 Central Time on WILL-TV, Masterpiece Theater presents Henry VIII, a dazzling new costume drama about the monarch who married six times, founded a new church, and presided over a bloodbath. Masterpiece Theater tonight at 8 on our companion station WILL-TV, PBS for Central Illinois. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 30s and east winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the morning, then becoming mostly cloudy, the high in the middle 50s with south winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of light rain, the low in the lower 40s with south winds around 5 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.